Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are The Inheritance, Come True, and Vonarovich. And of course, I'm going to ask you about the third one first, but you'll probably make me wait. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm doing okay, Jill. How about you?
I'm curious, but I'm well, thank you.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're well. And yeah, we'll get to that one in a moment. But let's begin with a very different kind of a movie, The Inheritance. All three of our films this week, again, are quite different from one another. The Inheritance, and I want to say at the outset here that there are right now a couple of different movies out called The Inheritance. I am talking about the one that is written and directed by Ephraim Asili, who was born in Pennsylvania, and who is very, very interested in African-American subjects, and he has been dealing with that for a very long time. And I mentioned that he was born in Pennsylvania, and Philadelphia is where The Inheritance takes place, and it is kind of some of the recent history of Pennsylvania is also involved in this movie. What we have here is a young man who has just inherited his grandmother's house. At the beginning of it, he's clearing out a lot of her stuff, books and so forth. And we see a whole lot of stuff dealing with black experience in America, and specifically black experience in Philadelphia. And eventually he and his girlfriend decide that they're going to turn that house into a kind of a little commune or collective where they and some of their black friends can get together and try to come up with a better way of thinking about black heritage in America, of thinking about their own place within that black heritage, and thinking about the history of all this. So that's what they decide to do. Now, all this sounds very sort of serious and solemn, I suppose. We have these people who get together in this house, and they start to accumulate a few friends around them. And before you know it, they have rules about how to live. Don't wear your shoes indoors, stuff like that. And yeah, on one level, this is all sort of about an exercise in what you might call collective self-improvement and collective attempt to understand more by these young black people about the experience of black people in America generally and in Philadelphia in particular. But the movie really has quite a bit of humor to it, and certainly quite a bit of liveliness to it. But that said, it's also very serious at its core. And one of the things that happens to be interesting about this house is that it takes place in a neighborhood where something very real, this is a sort of a non-fictional element of the movie, comes in. Something very real happened back in the middle 1980s, which is that there was a huge conflict, and a lot of people will already know about this, between a black liberation group called MOVE and the police of Philadelphia, which culminated in the police dropping a bomb on the house and sparking a fire which destroyed any number of houses around the area and killed quite a number of people. This is all very famous, and this has also been dealt with in the movies already. There's some fascinating stuff you can find if you look around, documentary material about this horrible event of the middle 1980s. But that's where this house is now that our movie is taking place in. So they're very aware of that, these young people. They're thinking about this even at the same time as they set up their own little commune, their own little collective, and decide to learn more about this, study more about this, and again, above all, simply immerse themselves in and learn more about their own heritage as black Americans and what this means positively and negatively. They study poetry. They bring in a poet named Sonia Sanchez to give them a reading. Another poet named Ursula Rucker also does a sort of a recitation for them. They study history. They look at old books and whatnot. And above all, this movie, which again, I want to once again give credit to the writer-director, Ephraim Asili, is hugely inspired by a movie of the 1960s from France, Jean-Luc Godard's amazing film, La Chinoise. La Chinoise is a movie about French Marxist students, Maoists, actually, way back in the 1960s when things were really radical. And that is very, very much the inspiration for this movie, The Inheritance, and indirectly a kind of inspiration for the characters of The Inheritance. In fact, at one point, I've done a couple of books on Jean-Luc Godard, so I'm pretty familiar with La Chinoise. But if you don't get the reference, there's a huge poster for La Chinoise hanging on the wall in the house, and you see it more than once, so that gives you a clue to it. So if you're interested in film history, you've got La Chinoise and Jean-Luc Godard to sort of refer to. If you're interested in American history, and specifically in Black American history, that is what this movie is all about. But it filters it through the experience of these very likable and engaging young people in Philadelphia. I had a good time watching The Inheritance. It's not a fun movie, but it's a very interesting movie and a very quirky and unpredictable movie. And again, I just had a good time watching it. I really do recommend it. And as we're starting to see more and more movies about Black experience come out from American writers and directors and distributors, this is just a good example of that. I'm very happy to welcome it here. The Inheritance, good movie. Our second movie today, as warned, will be totally different. Come True, which was written and directed by Anthony Scott Burns. And this is a horror movie. And as I've said more than once in our conversations, Jill, horror movies are really a common genre these days. My gosh, there are so many of them around, and a lot of them are good. You know, certainly not all of them, but we just seem to be in sort of a golden age of small independent horror movies. We're not talking about the big blockbusters with jillions of fancy special effects. We're talking about the smaller movies. There have been a number of them lately, and Come True absolutely falls into that category. So Come True, it's a very particular kind of horror movie. It's one of these horror movies that deals with the world of dreams. I suppose the most famous horror movie franchise that deals with the world of dreams are the Nightmare on Elm Street movies that Wes Craven commenced many a long year ago, and there were several of those. And they're good. They really do make a very good premise out of this idea that sleep is something that is right in our lives every single day, or at least every single night, and yet it remains mysterious, and we never seem to be quite sure exactly what it is or exactly how it works. And that's what gives some of the very effective spookiness to Come True, which again is a very, very good horror movie. So the main character is a young woman named Sarah, and she appears to be, well, she is, she's a kind of a semi-homeless person. She appears to have a house with at least a mother who lives in it, and she can go there, but she doesn't like to go there, and she actually sleeps on a playground slide at nights and is just living not a very comfortable and sort of rootless life. She goes to school, you know, she does some things, but she's clearly kind of unmoored in the world. And then she gets word about a sleep study. And of course, the sleep researchers, what they need is some young people who they can hook up with all kinds of wires on their heads and study their dreams. And for Sarah, this is the big attraction of this is it'll give her a place indoors, comfortable with a bed to sleep in. So she volunteers. She's actually get paid to sleep. So she volunteers for the sleep study, and she goes and she gets wired up, and she gradually realizes, they don't want to tell her much, the researchers, but they gradually tell her that sort of what's going on is that they're just going to be examining the sort of the waves that come out of her head while she sleeps. And there's a few other people, again, hooked up to similar gizmos along the way. Then one of the sleep researchers appears to become sort of romantically interested in her, and she is able to start pumping him for some more information. And she eventually discovers that what they've done is they figured out a way that they can read the brain waves that people have and actually visualize on a screen what people are thinking of. And what they've decided to do is to do this with dreams so that they can visualize people's dreams on a screen and understand better the world of dreams and what's going on in dreams, although the understanding itself proves to be extremely mysterious. Now, the movie goes on from there, and it involves Sarah's relationship with one of the dream workers and various complications that come along the way. And one of the big things that happens in this movie, and it happens right from the very beginning, is that there are these amazing dream images that fill the screen. Again, this is a movie that's streaming, and so, you know, probably most people will just look at it at home. But, you know, sit close to that screen, because it's really good getting immersed in these images. They are spooky, they are scary, they are very indefinite, and yet at the same time menacing and threatening. And that's a very effective part of this movie, is the dream imagery, which has the good sense never to get too specific specific, but to be very suggestive of things that, well, let's just say that have particular moods. Come True establishes really particular moods all the way through. It is a very powerful movie, just in terms of atmosphere and general feeling. Unfortunately, roughly the halfway point, there is a sequence which it's like the worst kind of music video. For some reason, the filmmakers decided to throw in a romantic sequence scored to this gentle sort of music, and I just found it really annoying. And then when that was over, I thought to myself, well, good, now the movie can get back to its horror movie business. But unfortunately, the second half of the movie contains a number of twists which I just did not find very effective and which were not very well done. And the end of the movie has already proved pretty controversial. It seems to come out of the blue, and it's sort of an arbitrary wrap-up for things, and I found it very unsatisfying. That said, I still recommend Come True, especially for people interested in horror films, because much of the way it establishes these very powerful moods and atmospheres and feelings, and a lot of the time it really works well, it's very nicely acted, and it just has that kind of quirky, unpredictable story that drew me in and held me. So I think that Come True is a worthy recent addition to the ever-growing genre of horror films. Our third movie today, Vernorovich, is about a very famous person named David Vernorovich, who was an artist in the New York scene, and a pretty major artist in his way. He's been dealt with before in the movies. There's been a pretty major documentary on him, was made a few decades ago. And now we have a new movie, which is also a documentary, but it's sort of an unconventional one. It deals with him very much through the materials that he created over the course of his life, which was a fairly short life. He died of AIDS when he was in his 30s, and that's very much what the movie is about. So David Vernorovich, again, this is a documentary, and this is a very real guy. And oh yeah, I want to mention one more thing about the title of this movie. The actual original title of this movie is something which cannot be said on the radio. It is profane and insulting and all of that, but Vernorovich loved to sort of wallow in the kinds of horrors that he faced as a young gay man back in the 80s, and that's very much what it's about. It's about gay experience back in the 80s. Anyway, when he was born, he came into a very conflicted family. His father was an abusive alcoholic. His mother did not do very much to preserve him from harm, and he went through a whole lot of misery and eventually ran away from home at a fairly young age, lived on the streets, was a street hustler, was involved in all of the kinds of horrific things that you can imagine that a young person living away from home without any resources whatever might get involved in. So he had a very, very difficult childhood and a very, very difficult adolescence and young adulthood. Somehow along the way, he became an artist. And he really started to believe in art, and he really decided to believe in expressing aspects of his own gay sensibility through art. His art was as difficult and as tough and as sort of harsh as the experiences that he had gone through, and that's one of the things that got him attention. And even though he always seemed to be sort of fending off any kind of attention from the art world establishment, somehow or other, he managed to make his way into that establishment. And he started to get stuff into art shows, and he started to get stuff even eventually into museums. All of this while always saying, I'm not comfortable, keep away from me, you rich people, you fancy people, keep away from me. Yet somehow he ended up being sort of semi-embraced by some of those rich people and fancy people, and ended up finding himself very much a part of the art world, even if he was never really a part of the establishment. Now, the movie, Vernorovich, tells Vernorovich's story. By the way, it was directed by Chris McKim. Tells his story, again, through a lot of his own materials. We see a lot of his art on the screen, his paintings, his collages, his photography. He was a very big photographer. We meet other people in the movie who he was engaged with and very close to along the way. We learn how they influenced him, how he was influenced by them. All this kind of thing is very, very set forth in a way that is never dull, and you never feel like you're being subjected to a lot of learning about this guy. It's really more of being immersed in his work than having his work pass before you in a sort of disembodied way on the screen. There's a lot of video material, a lot of film material, and it all makes the movie into a very lively collage itself. It's been compared to a movie from some years ago by another young artist called Tarnation, which was basically made on a Mac computer. computer, and which is basically just a whole lot of that artist's own material strung together. That's the case to some extent with Vonarovich, although it's more of a sort of an objective look at his work. Again, he died when he was still in his 30s of AIDS, and his suffering from AIDS and his impending death and his actual death were all reflected very, very directly in his art. So Vonarovich is a hard movie. It's a difficult movie. It is not a pleasant movie to watch, but it's a very, very interesting movie, and it's a movie which really immerses us in the history of art, in the history of American gay experience, and especially in the history of the horrific decade of the 80s when AIDS was on the rise and decimating the art community. It's not a fun movie to watch, but I found it very, very engrossing from beginning to end. And again, it's a period of our recent history that we must not ever allow ourselves to forget. So that is my pretty darn serious story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you as ever and always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films The Inheritance, Come True, and Vonarovich.